Support for Technology and Innovation Reporting comes from SDN Communications, your business broadband provider. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
And welcome to the April 5th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today, answer your questions. We are in the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls with Joel Brovelite. Hi, Joel.
Hey.
Great to have you back. Amos Asap is here, fresh back from a big security conference last week.
Yeah.
We'll hear more about that shortly. And Jeffrey Litterick from BIT and Peer. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello.
Good day, sir. Amos, let's talk more about this big security conference you're at, because that's kind of fun.
Sure.
You got to go out to San Jose. And
San Jose. And, boy, you know, the interesting thing, and this isn't necessarily...
Did you know the way?
to San Jose?
Oh, man.
The airline got me.
Sorry, there. I had to get Lyft in there.
Yeah, I didn't. There. I wouldn't have any idea how to get there.
You don't even know what we're talking about, do you?
Do you know the way to San Jose?
Sure, song?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, you're old. Just playing... You're just that good.
That's not Carole King, was it? Who was that?
No, it was... Give me a second.
We'll come up with it. Anyway, we're talking security in San Jose.
Yeah. And not necessarily security related per se. The conference was, but it's interesting to be out there because, you know, in the heart of Silicon Valley. And like I said, I took a Lyft just about everywhere. And so you get to do a lot of window gazing and to drive by these places that have the logos of all of the technology companies that, you know, we've all known forever, and basically seeing, hey, well, that's, you know, that's where Western Digital is, or that's where Cisco is, or that's where FireEye is. And it's just interesting to actually see those logos on the buildings and see that's where this stuff is coming from. So I thought that was interesting. But yeah, we talked a lot about security-related items and some new things that are coming out. And one of the things that I think is probably pretty relevant, especially for our listeners, is things using DNS security. And I know that doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people, but DNS is really the foundation of the internet. And when you're using any sort of device that goes out and connects really to anything, you're using DNS. And DNS is how we translate the easy-to-remember things like Microsoft.com into the actual address of where that website lives or whatever device it is that you're connecting to, right? And so if you were to go to thebadguys.com and you didn't realize that it was thebadguys.com, it was a bad thing, by having some sort of DNS resolver that is familiar with those bad things, rather than send back the address to thebadguys.com, it would say, this is a bad site. We're not going to send you the address. We're just going to do what we call a black hole, which is basically not send you anywhere. And so utilizing DNS security keeps all of the bad stuff outside of your network. Your firewall doesn't have to deal with it. Your antivirus on your laptop doesn't have to deal with it. If you're in an enterprise environment, your IPS doesn't have to deal with it. And this is stuff that can be done actually for free for all home users, as a matter of fact. So if you go to OpenDNS, Google that on the internet.
Okay.
There is a home version. Now, Cisco has acquired this, and they've turned it into an enterprise-grade platform, but there's still a free version out there, OpenDNS. Basically, what you're going to do is you're going to add some new DNS entries to your router. Sounds complicated, but they've got tutorials on how to do it on just about every brand out there, especially the huge ones, the Linksys, the Netgears, the Belkins, that sort of stuff. They'll walk you through where to add those. And so instead of using your ISP's DNS resolvers, you're going to use these. And the good news is that these DNS servers have all of the threat intelligence that all of the enterprises use as well. So as soon as something bad is found, really anywhere in the world, as soon as Cisco knows about it, they update these DNS servers, and then you also get that same update. A really cool feature of this is if you get a malicious email with ransomware in it, right? They want you to click on a link and download something.
Mm-hmm.
When that ransomware goes to encrypt your hard drive, it has to call out and say, I need a key in order to encrypt these things. Please send me the key. The bad guys have to know what the key is in order to unencrypt it. With the DNS security in place, it can't get to that key and therefore can encrypt your hard drive. So that's just an example of some ways that it will keep your devices safer. It also will keep you from going to websites that are serving known malware. It will keep you from going to places that you just shouldn't be, that you might not know about, but these large security firms do. Hmm. And again, it's free and really is a very good first line of defense when it comes to security. And this isn't new. This isn't something we just discovered last week.
Sure.
But it certainly is one of the things that we're pushing harder and harder in the enterprise world to get people to utilize these things. At the enterprise level, it comes with a lot more reporting. You can see what machines are going where, and you know, then you can maybe find out, okay, that machine's probably got some malware on it because it continually tries to make calls to bad places. But again, home users should be looking at that, and it, it makes things just a little safer.
Sweet. Any other big... what was the other, you know, hot topic, I guess?
The rest of it really dealt with the enterprise world, but, you know, firewall as a service, having a company provide the firewall for you, so you just connect your environment to theirs via VPN. They take care of all the firewalling, all the blocking, all the IPS, that sort of stuff. That's going to be something that's coming down the road, and it's... The basics are there today. It's not ready for prime time yet, but it'll get there.
Well, I saw an announcement from Cloudflare, I think, this week that is offering a VPN that they claim is not going to slow you down. I mean, that's been the big complaint, right? You use a VPN and everything turns to molasses
right.
on you.
Right.
And their thing is that they found that pre-caching some stuff helped YouTube users and Netflix users and other things. So it made people's lives like 30% faster. If you go through their, you know, it was like 1.1.1.1 or something like that.
Sure.
I forget what it was, but they're yep. providing a service so that you, same thing that you just talked about, just changing the path mm-hmm. of your home stuff to
right.
To the internet, you've got somebody working on that for you to speed it up or to make it more secure.
Yep. And you only have to do that once, right? This isn't something you're going to have to remember forever. So if you take and bite the bullet the one time on a Saturday afternoon and get it set up, and honestly, even with very little information or understanding of what you're doing, it shouldn't take more than 30 minutes to get it set up. They've got some really good tutorials out there. And once you get it set up, then things aren't – I mean, we can't say they're safe, but they're safer.
Safer.
Right.
And, you know, and thankfully – once you're actually logged into your home router, mm-hmm. They've made it. It's a lot less cryptic in there now.
It is
the environment than it used to be.
Yeah,
used to be you had to really figure out and know, you know, maybe a few different words for what the same thing was.
Yeah.
Terms,
yeah.
Yeah, the terms and you know, and
but you know that's a good point. As long as you're logged into your router, why don't you go ahead and update your firmware?
Oh,
right?
Please.
Yep. And then yeah. These days it's just hitting a button. It really is.
You know when I, you know how I know I need to update my router. Things stop working.
Really?
I just, start lagging really bad and my connection's not doing real great and
sure.
things aren't going well. And I'll go, oh, let me go check my router. And 9 times out of 10, there's firmware update or a patch or something that it wants me to download. I download it, reboot. Everything's golden again.
And as routers get more sophisticated, home routers, you know, things like providing guest Wi-Fi, putting in... I use the term net nanny. That's a trademarked reference, but you know, things that would do some content filtering for kids and that sort of stuff, or maybe time limits.
Mm-hmm.
As those routers become more complicated, there's more and more updates that need to be done to them. You know, back in the day, and even you know, 10 years ago, on a Linksys router, that all it did was network address translation. You rarely had a firmware update that needed to be done because it wasn't doing very much. But these days, they're getting to be more complicated. So it's a good idea to check that on a semi-regular basis.
Sure, sure. Jeff, any security news or anything going on and up towards the Pierway this week? Anything exciting?
Well, it's funny you mentioned your home router lagging out and stuff until your firmware update. There's actually there's a botnet infecting home routers as we speak that haven't been updated.
Oh.
And those are the kind of symptoms you get usually when your router gets attacked. Just as an FYI, so yes, you should be updating your router firmware because, yes, they are being attacked all the time. And if they get in, you will be part of a botnet fairly quickly. So
Was that a particular brand that said that's happening to this week?
It's not, it's a series of brands. What a lot of people don't realize is almost all the routers out there use the same internal chipsets. The screens you log into may look different and be customized, but the internal guts of the routers are just a couple of different chipsets. And it's these base level chipset drivers that seem to have most of the vulnerabilities in them. So it's those routers based off that chipset, and a lot of Broadcom issues in certain lines of their chipsets have had issues. And so what happens is it's whichever routers, it's a whole bunch of manufacturers, it's what routers are using what chipsets. And okay, as time goes on, different chipsets come on and stuff too. So, but it's not so clear cut that, hey, it's today it's Netgear, and tomorrow, no, it's Netgear, it's D-Link on these different models for this chipset, right? Because that chipset's in common across all these different manufacturers. So always update your firmware and make sure your devices are supported is really the best advice I can give. So because it kind of cuts a wide path, and most of the attack tools out there attack multiple versions of chipware on different vulnerabilities now as they are found. So
sure,
you're not really safe without updated firmware.
So the way to do that is if you've lost or misplaced or thrown away the book for your particular router, maybe to examine your router and find out, if the information's printed on the back of it for you, or get the model number off and Google that, because there's a web page that will explain to you how to log in. Right. To your router, and if you had changed the default password, which I hope you have, you would know that. But if you haven't, now would be a good time to do that as well. So you've got a little bit more maintenance to do, changing some passwords, and then actually doing the updates.
And some routers will let you do auto firmware updates. So if you are forgetful and it's a little scary sometimes because it can just reboot on you. At 2 a.m. if you're up and you're not sure if it's your router or if it's a firmware update, that's the problem. But you can do auto updates on some and almost all of them. Once you log in, if you're not updated, there's usually a big warning sign saying, hey, there's new firmware. Update your router kind of thing. And it's a one-click kind of thing. Realizing you will, your router will need to reboot and everything will disconnect briefly in wireless and wired from the internet and stuff like that. But if you are forgetful and you do have that function, turn it on. Now, if your router you log in has no automatic firmware update, you have to go to a website and download it. Most likely that router is no longer in support because that hasn't been the norm for 7-8 years, and it's probably time to go buy a new router. Just like anything, they do go off support, and while they may be working, it doesn't mean they're secure if you can't get new firmware updates because the manufacturer is no longer supporting that model.
Now, I don't lease my router from my ISP like a lot of folks do. Like a lot of if you have a cable modem or leasing a cable modem or a receiver or something from your ISP, a lot of times the router's built right in. So does this hold true for those folks too? If you're leasing those, can you log in and do that, or is your ISP taking care of that for you?
It depends on the ISP and contracts and stuff. For example, I lease my cable modem, and they handle the updates and stuff on the cable modem or DSL, and most ISPs do that. They don't always, sometimes they will, but they don't always handle the updates on the other side because there is always a chance you can break stuff and you need to reset the router when you do a firmware update, and unless you're physically there, you can't do that. So it really, really depends. You'd have to read the fine print and ask your ISP if they are doing it. If they are not doing it, you should be.
Okay. Speaking of updates as well, Amos, didn't you mention that the Asus laptops have an issue?
That was one of the things too. As long as we're talking updating firmware on Asus laptops too, or Asus systems should be done. There's an Asus utility that allows you to download and update, and it does other things too. It downloads drivers. It just keeps your machine working with the latest and greatest of the firmware and the software. Asus had an issue where their delivery mechanism for pushing these updates was actually hacked, right? And so millions of computers were downloading authorized, they were digitally signed, they were verified by ASUS as this is the right download for you. They claimed, you know, that this is safe and you should be doing it. Well, the problem was is that ASUS didn't know, but their systems had been compromised. And while it was downloaded to millions of machines, it actually was looking for some specific MAC addresses, which is a hardware identifier inside your computer. And if it found that, then it downloaded some additional malware to it. Most people are not in that list. I believe the number was only like 600 that it was looking for. It was actually very targeted. That doesn't mean that your machine still isn't susceptible to being taken over by this malware if it's installed. So that being said, you should now go out to ASUS's website or use their utility again, and this time they promise it's safe, which, you know, that's the irony, right? Is what you used before that caused the problem is what you should use now to try and fix it. But you really should be keeping up to date on those. That was the Shadowhammer vulnerability, which I thought was a fun name.
Yeah, that's the coolest name I've heard all week.
Yeah, you know. So ASUS users, make sure you're updating your machines. And not just Windows updates, but the ASUS updates as well.
Well, we need to take a quick break. I think there's probably a lot of Mac news to talk about. We usually say product news, but it's not. It's kind of not product-y, is it? It's kind of software-y. I guess it's a software product.
Yeah, service.
Right. Service-related big announcements coming down from Apple this week, and we will chat more about that after taking this quick break. Back at it from the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls with Joel Brovelite, Amos Aesop, and Jeff Litterick in Pierre. We're talking tech today, and we have a number of ways to get a hold of us. 956-7372 is our text number. 800-852-0214 is a number you can talk to us directly on the air. Twitter users, I'm at KentSDPB, and the email address is inthemoment@sdpb.org. We have a text message that came in. It said, who can I call to print text messages off my phone? I just need one conversation printed. Is there somewhere local I can bring my phone to? And the follow-up message is, it's an Android, it's less than a year old, and they were not saved to my Verizon account. I'm not sure that matters, but is there an easy way for this person to print a conversation from a text source? Is there drivers and things you can download? Or?
There is mobile printing that's available. So if you've got the right printer that you can do some air printing or HP. I forget what HP's term for it is, but probably the easiest way is to screen capture the conversation. You know, however many of those it takes in order to get it. And most phones these days will actually allow you to do a screen capture that scrolls. Right, I know the iPhones will. I know the Androids will. The latest versions of them. I don't know what operating system it's running on the Android, but so do a screen capture if you have to do multiple screen captures, and then just email those to yourself to a machine that has a printer already attached to it, and print them out that way. I think that's the easiest way.
Well, and another easy way is to use a program you can download to do it for you automatically. There's actually, if you have a computer, you need a computer, there is an app, and if you just do a quick search, YouTube will actually give you all the details, that once you plug your Android phone into it, actually lets you back up all your text messages, treat them as emails, you can delete them, you can move them around, you can save them locally, and you can print them off.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's you know, the article is about how to preserve it for court appearances and stuff like that, but it's fairly simple. You just have to have a Windows computer to run the program on, and of course, be able to plug the Android USB into that computer. So,
yeah. But I'm not aware of anybody locally. You just take your phone to, and
yeah,
you can kind of just do that yourself.
Now,
yeah.
Now, if you have sort of printers and stuff, Android phones will print to them just like Apple or iOS devices, and you might be able to print that way through depending on what text message app you're using from your carrier too. I know mine lets me print that stuff out directly, but you have to have a printer that, you know, it supports all that stuff, and then you've connected it to your Android device. So I don't know if anyone who's sell services that has printers there that you could go in and connect to, pair up, and then print off. So
yeah, easier just to grab a couple screenshots, zip them off in an email, and print away.
Yep.
I guess is probably the way to do that. Moving on, Joel. I've read a few articles.
There have been a few articles
on some product announcements from Apple.
Yeah.
And this wasn't your usual big splashy kind of product announcement thing, was it?
No, it wasn't. It was kind of unusual in that it was a large media event with lots of special guests, and they released no hardware, which is usually what Wall Street loves to see, is new hardware. In fact, they did something really different. Maybe 2 weeks before that or a week before that, they actually did a bunch of hardware updates, but really didn't, you know, have a big event and didn't, you know, just kind of, like any other company, just release them and put them on their website. So there were lots of hardware updates. I think partially because most of them were just revision updates, although there's some impressive new stuff there. But I think mostly to not take away from their, you know, their Showtime. It's Showtime event, which is what you're referring to.
Okay.
So we'll just we can go down the big announcement.
Yeah, hit me with your number.
Yeah.
Number one, number two.
There were like seven really big announcements during this event, and you know, up first was their Apple TV Plus, which is not actually a piece of hardware, but a service that is basically a streaming service that they're announcing that they're going to roll out in the fall. And with that, they brought a bunch of directors and actors and artists up to talk about their new shows. They have scripted shows that they're going to put on the platform. There's kind of more information to go from to come from that, since it's not going to be rolled out till the fall. Mm-hmm. But it's going to launch in like 100 companies, and Apple already has, I think, 30 original projects in the works. I don't know if they'll get other content from other places. There isn't a price yet, so kind of yet to come there. But they're basically entering the subscription service market for video in that one. And that's called the Apple TV Plus. Okay. And I think it's going to be available on not just the Apple TV. I think you're going to be able to watch it on Roku. And I'd have to get back to you.
Oh, you better be able to crack out of that. I mean,
Apple's
got an ecosystem, but
for sure.
Better
I know they made several partnerships with smart TV vendors, such as Samsung. So you'll be able to go direct to that. So, and probably more to roll out on that one. Another big announcement was the Apple Arcade, which is an ad-free game subscription service, which is kind of a clever idea. Basically, I don't know if you've ever looked for games on an app store, whether that was Android or Apple. There's a lot,
mm-hmm.
and it's hard to tell which ones you want. So Apple kind of came up with a solution where they would have a subscription service. And I'm not sure they announced the price on this, but maybe they did. It was around $10 or something like that. They may not have announced the price. That could just be in my head. That's not going to roll out to the fall either. But so for a flat fee, you're going to be able to play not every game that's on the App Store, but a large hand-picked selection. They showed some of them, and some of them are fantastic. Games you know, some you don't know, and you'll be able to try them. You don't have to buy them. You can just, play them as long as you have the subscription. And you'll be able to play them not just on your phone, but on your tablet and your desktop as well, as long as you have a Mac, of course.
Okay.
So that's a kind of a big deal. I think that'll be popular in my house.
The cost of a couple of games.
Right, for sure. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people might save a little money that way, for sure. Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest announcements at the show was the Apple Card, which is basically a credit card service that Apple is kind of doing the back end, and they're partnering with a bank. I think Lehman Brothers? No, that's not it. I can't remember the name of Goldman Sachs. Yeah, sure. They partner with Goldman Sachs, and basically they're trying to kind of reinvent how credit cards are used. So it will be a card that you can use anywhere. You'll obviously use it with your digital device, but they also have a physical card that you can get, which is made out of titanium.
Yeah, of course.
Which is kind of a nice gimmick, but doesn't have your name on it, doesn't have anything on it, just has the information. I think it has your name on it, but doesn't have any of the numbers on it. So we'll see how that works, but I really like, they showed the interface on how you can see your purchases and how they'll break them down, kind of in a way that you would wish that your bank would do for you and show you what you're spending money on and how you can save money.
Okay.
They're kind of breaking that down. So I think it'll be very interesting. And I think after they roll it out, you're going to see a lot of banks go, maybe we should do that too. So I think that ultimately is going to be probably the biggest announcement. Although I could be wrong, the other one, the next one was Apple News Plus.
That was where I was going.
Of course you were, absolutely. It's basically a subscription service that's live now. It's $10 a month, and you have access to a bunch of magazines. I think 300 or something.
So the magazines are thrown in with the newspapers?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. That's even better, because I was kind of thinking in my mind that it was the magazines like the Vanity Fairs and the, everything else was a separate deal.
No.
And
big titles like Time, National Geographic, Wired, Essence, Sports Illustrated. So you for $10 a month, you'll be able to browse all of these magazines, read the articles, whatever they'll. And they've changed their feed. If you've got an iPhone now or an iOS device, you're probably already familiar with how Apple News works, at least partially. But it's kind of revved up quite a bit. Big newspapers too, and I assume that they'll be, getting more. Right now, I think it's just the U.S., Canada, and I think the U.K. and Australia are going to be next, and then they'll roll.
Well, South Dakota's in there, so we're good
for sure.
And the other, the nerdy part of it is some of the publishers still send the PDF out, and that's the way, that's the interface. But a lot of folks are doing the Apple, it's an Apple News format, ANF,
right?
Which is, I think, what you were alluding to with the seeing the visual, how they kind of amped up the the visuals on that. And so if the particular news outlets that you like to follow are using the Apple News format, you get a really good experience.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of they kind of did it on from two directions. For the producers, whether that's the magazine or the newspaper, they kind of give you guidelines and templates and training on what to do and how to publish it, so you don't have to have this amazing huge IT section dedicated to putting out this product all the time. You can basically latch onto this service and put your product out, your news, your entertainment, whatever it is, in kind of an easy format. And then, of course, for the consumer, it's great because you've kind of got one source you can go to, and you know how it works. If you're anything like me, and you've maybe subscribed to a couple magazines, or you read a few things online, everything's like, I go here for this, and I go here for this, and I wish this one worked like that, and I wish I could just save where I was on this one. So a unified source, some people maybe don't like, but I think the general population really likes, having the convenience of knowing how something works.
Sometimes I just have to try it.
Right, for
sure. I try to tell myself, I'm not going to like that. Well, sometimes you just have to try it, see if you like it, and try to, consolidate services down to certain things. There's probably a few things that I'll still have to go to Reddit for.
For sure.
Just for information and tech news and other things, and to get that viewpoint, that concentrated tech viewpoint from those people. I'm going to probably still need to go to some far off places.
I didn't get the impression they were trying to roll this out and saying, we're going to be everything to everybody. You're not going to need to go anywhere else for news. I really think they were trying to say, for the content that we want from these sources, or you might want from these sources, this is a place you can go for one price and view it all.
What I hope this is a better interface. What I used to like from Flipboard.
Yeah.
What I hope is it's a really great Flipboard kind of a thing, and that's what I'm shooting for. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we'll see.
For sure.
Flipboard's still good, and it's going to work for a number of people. But I'm hoping the Apple.
Yeah, I mean, you can check it out for the first month for free. If you've got an iOS device, I highly recommend that.
Well, very cool. We are just about to our next break, and we're going to go ahead and take that. When we come back, we got a whole bunch of, there's GPS things to talk about, launching satellites left and right, a whole bunch of artificial intelligence type things, and then this car thing I want to talk about too. It's kind of an interesting deal.
Always with the cars.
It's transportation and tech. It's a marriage made in heaven, I think. I don't know. We'll be back after this. A little funky for bump music, isn't it? Yeah. Well, this is dubstep, if you've never been a part of that. It is. You're right. You knew this. That's, what is that? Monsters and scary monsters and nice sprites? Yeah. So researchers have found out if they play this for mosquitoes, they stop reproducing.
I don't know. I mean, they... Don't you think that's a vibration thing? I'm pretty sure mosquitoes don't have a taste in music, really. I know lots of people that are like mosquitoes and don't have a taste in music. I think there's nothing to that science.
All right. Yeah. Well,
I'd be interested to know what the control parameters were on that.
Exactly. I mean,
was it volume level? Was it right. Were they in a small vessel that they were actually
killed? How many types of music did they try?
They tried a whole bunch of different kinds of music, and they found out that particular song.
But which ones, though? Which ones? I mean, if they tried... you know, So What by Miles Davis and you know, the 1812 Overture, you know, got,
and
they only
Johnny
tried
Cash.
Three things. I mean, like, and yeah, sure, yep. And Johnny Cash. I mean, there's not enough in there. Show me.
You're always skeptical of the controller group, aren't you?
I might be skeptical.
Okay. All right.
Who did that study?
Oh, some researchers in a university somewhere.
Yeah.
That wanted to be famous.
Yeah,
for
and they got paid for that, I bet. Right. Somebody allocated money.
We'll check.
They're getting paid for it now. I tell you what.
I'm not sure they were even in the U.S., but I just thought that'd be a fun thing to talk about. But there's lots of other fun things to talk about. Would you pay somebody to log into your car and drive you somewhere?
I wouldn't have until you told me about this story.
So there's a company called Designated Driver, and they're developing a teleoperator system, and they're not the only ones. There's a Nissan and General Motors, and I think Lyft and Uber are in there somewhere, and then there's a bunch of ones I can't pronounce that I've never heard of that are developing.
And
this.
How does it work?
So the picture I saw was there's a dude sitting in his living room.
Or a person,
and there's six monitors in front of that person, him or her. And it's like logging in, I suppose, like Forenza or any other car. You know, there's a steer, you know, and they log into your car and drive you somewhere.
And I just think that is a brilliant idea. I think I would totally do that. You know, you brought up during break, you know, one way to utilize that could be somebody could drive your father to an appointment, depending on the situation, maybe they would drive your daughter to school or whatever it is. Or, of course, using the nom de plume, you know, take you home from the bar at night or whatever.
Well, I just realized Designated Driver, and then I went, Designated Driver,
of course,
DD.
Yeah. Here's the deal. This would be a really great idea. I think it'll work if they can make it work legally. However, it's going to be for a short period of time, don't you think? I mean, I think there's going to be a window where people will drive cars and maybe this service will be available. But I think eventually, don't you think a self-driving car is just going to take over? And this is what I've thought of soon as you mentioned it, is these companies are just going to mine data on all of these drivers on how to drive, so that they can then eliminate the driver. I mean, don't you think that's exactly what you would do if you were these companies? It's what I would do.
Hmm. Amos, sure. I see the gears grinding.
Well, you know, I hadn't thought of that either. But yeah, they probably have the systems in the cars that are doing the readings and the telemetry that would be needed for an auto or a self-driving car, but then comparing it to the reactions that person is doing and seeing, would we have made the right choice based on a cat in the ditch or a snowstorm or something like that? That would be an interesting way to kind of validate that the program that you're doing on a large scale was, in fact, appropriate.
Yeah, and of course, you know, it wouldn't have to be a turnkey. You could have these drivers eventually be weaned off of it. You know, the computer can take over more and more, and then the human can be just there just in case there's an emergency or they see something or whatever, and eventually, okay, we don't need you anymore. We've got that all worked out. So, I mean, that's what I think when I hear that. I said, well, that's a great idea to get all sorts of data and get paid to gather that data.
I was just thinking it's a great idea to drive me to Rapid City.
It's a great idea for that, too. I would totally do it. Like I said, I don't know how big the window is, but I think there's a window where that will be useful, and then that window will close.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. Well, that's... I'm not sure what folks think at home, but...
yeah, imagine using it for semi-drivers, you know?
They can sure let us know. We have a number of ways to get a hold of us, 956-SDPB or 956-7372 is how to text us. Twitter users, I'm at KentSDPB. The email address, inthemoment@sdpb.org. GPS systems. This is kind of cool. So this is like almost like a Y2K thing tonight. Going into tomorrow, their 10-bit week number is about to flip over. And it's going to become 0000010 zeros tomorrow. They ran out of their 10-bit system for weeks is run out of digits. So new GPS systems have a 13-bit. That sounds like it's going to get by for a while. But have a new thing. But older GPS systems, people aren't really sure how those are going to react tomorrow.
I guess we'll see.
Well, if it's as catastrophic as Y2K was, boy.
then nothing, right?
But firmware has been out for those older ones for some time to fix or compensate for the rollover. So It's been a known issue. The problem is how many people have updated their GPS devices that are not like in a phone or something. So
yeah, that was going to be my question. Who still has a standalone
system or something? You probably should check for a firmware update if it starts going haywire tomorrow.
We'll see what cell networks,
So what about
electrical utilities and what industrial stuff didn't get their patch done?
What about older cars with first generation navigation systems in it? I mean, who updates the firmware in their car, especially if it's older? Yeah. I mean, there was a legitimate items that might not work.
And like Y2K, we're not really going to know till we know, right? I mean,
yeah.
That was the thing. Everybody was like, "Are you going to be are you going to be around at midnight?" No, not really.
I would really be curious to know how many people that would actually ultimately affect. I mean, don't you think that most people are using their phones for navigation? Even if you have one in your car, it seems like you would have transitioned to a newer device that you're kind of more used to.
And even the older ones in the cars, usually you need to do map updates, and that's how the firmware updates come through is, you burn a CD with your maps or a DVD and you stick it in and it updates. I've seen that on older cars. Not saying people do, but there's always been map updates and stuff for that older stuff, and that usually includes the firmware updates too.
Well, speaking of things flying around in space, a big Amazon announcement this week was the launch of a bunch of satellites to do internet. Low Earth orbit. Am I using the right term there? Low Earth orbit, LEO. And they're going to do, 3,236 satellites they're going to launch into lower orbit that's going to cover the world with internet.
Seems appropriate for an online book reseller. I mean, is there anything Amazon doesn't do?
I don't think so. Well, and they've legitimately got, servers and other products.
Yeah,
other
I would say that's kind of more up their alley at this point than several things that they
How can people order their products from, out in South Dakota if they don't have broadband?
Does this turn into the competition that Google was doing with the balloons that were supposed to be over
Wasn't
the
underserved? Facebook that was doing that? Or maybe Facebook was also doing
it. Could be. Who knows at this point?
Everybody's got their
own. Google had blimps. Facebook has balloons and some mesh networking. And then Amazon. And this actually working with SpaceX was a satellite one like this.
Starlink. SpaceX is going to launch 20,000 of these things. So Amazon, 3,200. Boeing is going to put 3,000 up. OneWeb is going to put 2,000. There's going to be like 20,000 things that are scheduled to be launched into low Earth orbit now. It's going to get
amazing.
It's going to get crazy. Astronomers are saying they're going to have to You know, I might go to the other side of the moon to do any, you know, I mean, seriously, to get through this field of satellites they're talking about launching for us.
Yeah, but, you know, anymore, I mean, if you're a large company, you are 100% reliant on having internet connection, whether you're selling it or not. So, I mean, I can see all of these companies being very invested in making sure there's good, fast network connection for their customers and themselves. So, I mean, I don't really see that as kind of an overreach thing. I think that it's kind of an obvious play for anybody, you know, large enough to do so.
Well, these are the plans, at least.
Right.
We'll see.
Of course.
We'll see what actually, you know, we all know the launch rate or failure rate of launches of space vehicles. I mean, there's, you know.
I actually don't, no.
Okay, well.
Is it a lot?
You know, it's surprisingly it's not, but it's there's a percentage there. It's
sure,
I think it's
course.
I think
we always, we hear about the bad ones. Right?
They probably plan for that.
You only get to see the spectacular ones, but or hear the really really super expensive ones. Those are interesting to hear about as well. But interestingly enough, could be last mile internet for some folks in South Dakota. I mean, down the line, I don't know the cost. And the speeds, you know, everybody's got to question that. But if you're talking about blanketing everything on the planet Earth, you're talking about Faith and Marty and everywhere
sure.
else too.
Sure.
Middle of the Badlands.
And, you know, we do have satellite internet now through things like DirecTV and such. And while it is an option for those who are underserved with no other options at all, if you're in a valley or if you're just in an area where the ISPs can't get to, but... there's some downfalls to that, too. There's some high latency, which is the amount of time it takes for the connection to get somewhere, right? Once you start that download, you can pull things down pretty quick, but it takes a little – it's like turbo lag on a car. It takes a little while to get going, but once it does, it really moves. So it's not perfect, but for customers who would be underserved otherwise, yeah, it's certainly an option.
Could be neat. Some of the announcements from Verizon this week – they've turned up 5G.
5G, a little hard to find if you're not, even if you're in Minneapolis or Chicago. That was their two initial launch sites. But I guess if you're right next to U.S. Bank Stadium where the Final Four is going to be, that was the big thing was to get that up and going. I saw some tests that were showing like 700 or 800 meg downloads to your phone. So, you know, you're talking about downloading a movie in just a few seconds. And of course, you have to have a device that supports that, which right now requires, is it a Motorola Z3 or something with an add-on piece? And then eventually Samsung is going to have the S10 5G out, which will be the first one you can buy that's self-contained. But right now it's not available. So,
well, the other practical application is home internet.
Sure.
They put a, you know, this box in your house or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, at those 5G. Speeds, yeah, all of a sudden it's much faster than my cable.
You've got 1 gigabit, and what they promise is 1 gigabit service to your home.
Which 800 meg is you know, with overhead in there is right on par with if you've got 100 meg service at home and 80 meg down is, you know, is not too out of the ballpark. So that's reasonable.
We'll see. And $10 extra a month.
For us, we're excited about it because at the enterprise level, it creates a level of redundancy for network connections. And there's a thing called SD-WAN or software-defined wide area network that says, you know, for your important traffic, you might want to use these expensive lines. They're called MPLS, and they're lines you can buy through your carriers, through CenturyLink and Verizon and locally SDN and that sort of stuff. But they're very expensive to use. And then for your non-important information, like everybody who's surfing Facebook and YouTube, why don't you just send that out like, you know, a cable modem that's less expensive, doesn't have very good quality of service. It might go down, who knows. But for us, having a 5G backup connection for when one of those things goes down, maybe a backhoe hits a line or something like that, just another option for companies to be able to have good quality of service.
So this is a whole nother layer of service. This isn't a combined, you know, same tower, same line, same...
Well, not at all. No, the towers actually have to be much closer together. It's physically different equipment. And so you're going to start seeing this. And we were just reading this that Sioux Falls has... made a partnership with Verizon to do this, but they're going to have to start putting these antennas on things like streetlights because they have to be so close together. The cells for 5G are much smaller, which is good news for people who might be living in a dead zone because you're going to start to see these cells come into your area. But at the same time, they're also too heavy for Sioux Falls' existing light poles. So anywhere that they want to put them, they have to put in a new light pole, new concrete base, that sort of stuff. So there's a lot of infrastructure that's going to go with this in order to get it up and going. Rumor that I've heard is that literally starts middle of this month. So,
All right.
Completely a rumor. I've only heard that from two people.
Well, and it's interesting that it's so close.
Yeah.
Minneapolis, 5 hours from where I'm sitting right now. And Chicago, what, 10, 12?
10, yeah.
So it's in the neighborhood, which is interesting. It didn't get launched in L.A. and New York first and work its way inward. It's kind of starting inward and working its way out.
Yeah, and I don't know what the reason for Chicago was, but obviously there's a lot of focus on the NCAA basketball tournament going on right now. And right, you've got a lot of people who are paying attention to that. And if you can combine your rollout with something that has so many eyeballs on it already, even better, even though people themselves won't be able to use it.
Marketing.
Yes.
I think that's called marketing. Yeah. Oh, boy. You know, just a couple little quick things. I thought it was neat. Amazon just patented the ability in a drone to inflate a balloon. And so the idea is that Amazon's flying a drone into your neighborhood to drop something off, and people don't like noise. These things are loud. It gets to your neighborhood, a balloon inflates, and the propellers have to work less to propel that. To propel your package to the last part of where your house is. How interesting is that? It
inflates with something like helium?
It's got a canister with some sort of gas or whatever to inflate the balloon. And maybe it's just a pump. Maybe it's using the air that's already around it. But anyway, this balloon inflates, makes the drone have to work less because it becomes lighter. Props spin down, get it to where it needs to go, drops off your package, and off it goes.
Interesting.
How cool is that? I think it's very innovative.
I wonder, absolutely. At one point, we're going to be walking around in a park and trip over a dead drone. And I mean, these things have to become disposable at some point where they don't mind if, well, we lost 60 of those today, you know.
Oh, yeah, that will absolutely happen, yeah. For sure.
I know, you know, my drone, I nickname it Crashy. I know the next crash, it's going to... I can only Gorilla Glue this thing together so many times and work with it. So it's, yeah, people shoot them out. I mean, they'll go out and shoot them out of the sky just to make a YouTube video out of them now. But anyway, thanks for being on the show today. Appreciate it, Amos, Jeff, Joel. Appreciate your time very much. That's all the time we have for today's show. We're with you always at SDPB with our app or at SDPB.org. Go there and click on Listen.